All these friendly faces on the first day of our session this year. Welcome to House Transportation. So this meeting of House Transportation will come to order, and the time is 3:45 promptly. Members present are Representative Drummond, Representative Tallarico, Representative, we have a couple that are gone, but we have a couple of guests with us. We have Representative Chris Tompkins. We have Representative Dan Ortiz. Did I get everyone? I think so. Yeah. So welcome. And myself, Chair Stutes. If you would all please silence your phones. We're asking that the audience not approach the committee table. If you need to pass a note to get the attention of my committee, if you need to pass a note, please get the attention of my committee aide, Matt Greening, who's sitting right over here, and he'll be happy to help you. I'd like to thank Lori Rowland and Sophie Jones, our committee secretaries, and Doug Bridgets from the Juno LIO for technical and teleconferencing support. We have a quorum to conduct our business today. Today, the committee will hear a presentation by the Alaska Municipal League on the importance of the marine highway system to Alaska and the urgent need for more funding. This will be followed by an invited municipal testimony from Haynes, Skagway, Wrangell, Gustavus, Angoon, Kodiak, Cordova, Pelican, Seldovia, Unalaska, Petersburg, and Homer. We've also received written testimony from the municipality of Anchorage, which I will read into the record at the start of invited testimony. As anyone who lives in or near a coastal community knows, ferry service has immeasurable impacts on our way of life in Alaska. Ferry service provides many communities with vital access to health care, groceries, equipment, goods and services, school functions, shipping, and access to the rest of the state. In short, the Alaska Marine Highway System keeps coastal communities strong, healthy, and a good place to live and raise our families. However, the system also provides a strong source of income to businesses in the Anchorage Bowl and elsewhere in the interior as businesses and individuals from coastal areas travel to purchase goods and services. The drastic reduction and, in many cases, the complete elimination of service has had a devastating impact on coastal communities this summer, fall, and especially this winter. The current levels of service represent serious health, safety, transportation access, and revenue concerns for coastal Alaskans, but also revenue concerns for the Anchorage Bowl businesses. I called this hearing to keep the spotlight and the focus on the urgent need for more Alaska Marine Highway funding now. The Northern Economics Report recently released by DOT, in my opinion, focuses too much on the financial aspects of the system and attempts to tailor service to a budget instead of tailoring the system to what coastal communities and communities in Alaska need. And so far as the accuracy of this report, I would like to point to page 204 of the report, where under Kodiak Community Profile, it states, and I quote, in 2018, there were 1,295 permanent residents in Kodiak. They're wrong. Later on that same page, it states there was one public school in Kodiak Station, Peterson Elementary School. They are wrong again. That makes me question how accurate this report actually is in relation to reality and the needs of these communities and what exists in these communities. The population cited is woefully incorrect, as is our number of schools. This again illustrates to me how out of touch this report is with Alaskan communities. No one argues that changes need to be made to the Marine Highway System's operational efficiency, governance, contracts, and overall structure. However, there is a separate conversation than the one we are having today, which is The system needs a higher baseline level of funding to operate and serve Alaska effectively. Briefly, however, I would like to mention that I find the state of repair that Alaska Marine Highway System has allowed our mainliners to fall into extremely alarming. Four of our mainliners are currently in mothball status, and a total of 6 out of 12 of Alaska Marine Highway System ferries are not in service because of disrepair, lack of maintenance, or poor planning. The legislature expects the Alaska Marine Highway System to properly identify maintenance issue and make timely funding requests to address those so that the fleet can operate and serve Alaskans. Serious conversations will happen this session about long-term planning and ensuring that the Alaska Marine Highway System is properly maintaining our ferry system for future operations. That being said, this hearing is about the urgent need for more operational dollars. As a coastal legislator and the chair of the Transportation Committee, getting funding back into our ferry system is my top priority this session. In person and available for questions from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, we have Mike Lesman and we have Mary Soroki, Deputy Commissioner. Thank you both for attending. To start off the presentation, I would like to invite Nils Andresen, Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League, to give a short PowerPoint presentation on the importance of the Alaska Marine Highway System to municipal governments. So, Mr. Andresen, if you would join us, state your name and affiliation for the record, and proceed with your presentation, please.
Great. Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Nils Andresen, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. Thank you for this opportunity to talk with you this afternoon. I know it's the first day of this legislative session, and there's a lot to talk about when it comes to the Alaska Marine Highway System, but really I want to focus my remarks and this presentation on what we view as a call to action for the legislature to act quickly in response to what communities have identified as an urgent and critical situation in their for their residents and municipalities. I will give a brief overview then of a municipal perspective on the AMHS. So, and I know that many of you will be familiar with this. The system has been in place since 1959 with its original voter-approved bond package. 34 port communities, 23 local governments were incorporated in their current form post Marine Highway System, which means that for many of them, their incorporation was based on that transportation link. The responsibilities of the cities and boroughs that are impacted by the system and responsive to the system range from police powers to hospitals, water and wastewater, to schools. And essentially, these municipalities are ferry dependent, not just for their local government operations, but for business, safety, schools, and health. 34 port communities, 33 cities and boroughs as part of that, with a total residency of 120,000 Alaskans, a combined budget for those 33 cities and boroughs of $610 million. Just for perspective, and it doesn't come out as well maybe on the screen, but you have the slides in front of you. So these are the 165 cities and boroughs in the state. And of those, these are the ferry cities and boroughs. And for those in the audience, there's light blue that describe most of those southeast communities that are impacted. The budgets of those 33 municipalities, again, combined for $610 million. The ferry system, as part of their tax base, is equivalent to $33 million. Those cities and boroughs carry a combined debt of $720 million in general obligation, revenue, and school bond debt. They contribute $73 million to school districts, and for most of them, that comes as a contribution of as much as 37% for school construction, or as much as 40% for school construction and maintenance, and for many well beyond their local contribution. 15 of those are PCE communities, and together they receive $24 million in fisheries taxes. And I think these are important numbers because they demonstrate for any reduction in service to the ferry that's servicing those communities, it lessens a local government's ability to pay back their debt, contribute to schools that are the state's obligation, address high cost of energy in their communities, and contribute to what is essentially a thriving fisheries industry. The responsibilities of those port cities and boroughs, I think it's important to recognize that for the region, for the system, education, when it comes to education, only three of those cities and boroughs are outside a municipal school district, only three as part of the regional education attainment areas. And if you look at it from a statewide perspective, their participation, their sustainability as local governments and their ability to contribute to school districts is really incredible, the greatest proportion of regional municipal school districts in the state when you're looking cross-border, cross-jurisdiction. Of those 33 for public safety, 20 have police powers. They have active law enforcement. That means that troopers aren't essential or contribute to law enforcement, but it's the responsibility of the local government in those communities. Eight of those manage their own hospitals, which is very different than across the state. And a lot of it's linked to that coastal transportation function that they depend on. Finally, 25 of those 25 of the 33 participate in PERS. So again, any lessened service, any cuts to the system result in their lessened ability to contribute to education, to have sustainable municipal school districts, which offset the state's responsibility for schools, to provide law enforcement, which otherwise would fall back to the state, Department of Public Safety, and troopers to provide, to manage their own hospitals, which the Coast Guard, which the tourism industry depends on in those communities. And finally, when we're thinking of PERS, the state pension obligations, these municipalities are actively contributing to paying off the net pension liability incurred by the state. They're active participants in offsetting some of the other costs of that system. For those 33 cities and boroughs, they also have 2,275 employees that they're directly responsible for. Any threat to the $33 million in tax base that they experience from the ferry system means that they have to make hard decisions about those employees. The value of the Alaska Marine Highway System, and I'm glad to have mayors and managers in the audience and able to contribute to the conversation today, and they'll talk more about all of these. But the value of the Alaska Marine Highway System, well beyond the cost, includes the fishing industry, the health and safety of residents, of Alaskans, the ability of residents to reach out beyond their community and to participate in other community activities, to get to shopping opportunities, to have businesses. State and federal construction will speak to, and for many of the projects that these communities are planning for capital improvement projects or otherwise, you have state and federal construction dollars and goods coming through the ferry system. Education, I've talked about, and I've seen a number of news articles that talk about the dependence that school districts have on the ferry system for moving students between communities. The Coast Guard, dependent on the ferry system. And ultimately, it ends up being a dependable tax base and contributing to the tax base of those local governments who are able to augment the needs of the fishing industry, provide health and safety, meet the demands of residents, contribute to education, and ensure that state and federal construction contributes to the sustainability of the community. Again, these are the ferry system cities and boroughs. The indirect benefit, though, goes well beyond those coastal communities. When we're talking about the indirect value of the system reaches 658,000 Alaskans. Those are just in incorporated areas of the state, cities and boroughs, all of whom are members of the Alaska Municipal League. And I pulled just two number charts from the McDowell Group report from just a few years back that demonstrate that beyond coastal communities, you have Denali, you have Anchorage, you have Wasilla, all of whom their residents are dependent on and actively participating in that system. The McDowell Group report as well, and I would submit that for the record if you didn't, if you wanted it, submit it again, but part of the record from 2015, I imagine, and from every committee hearing. But there is a statewide impact beyond the local governments who this impacts. We're talking about 1,700 Alaskan jobs in 44 Alaska communities, $104 million in Alaska wages, $273 million in economic impact, $84 million spent with the 500 Alaska companies. Two-thirds of the 319,000 passengers are Alaskans. This isn't a system designed just for coastal communities. It's not just a system designed for port cities. This is very much contributing to Alaska as we know it. And we know that when it comes to contributing to the tourism industry, that's effective, but the marine highway system spending per passenger versus other tourist transportation modes is 1,700 to 941. A great contributor to these local governments across the state. So, I mean, I would ask this committee, and ultimately I would ask the legislature to consider value beyond cost, and to ask, you know, what is the role of the state in contributing to the future of this system. It is insufficient to say that the intent is to reduce the state's financial obligation or liability. And this was a quote within the recent reshaping report. But Alaska municipal leaders have said that's not enough. That can't be our goal in approaching this issue. That when it comes to value versus cost, we have to think beyond transportation. And I appreciate that that's the House committee you're in charge of, Madam Chair. But this goes well beyond transportation. It intersects with community and regional affairs. It intersects with all the committees that the legislature has formed and undergirds a lot of the outcomes from others. Ultimately, these cuts threaten community and economic development. And when it comes to the vetoes that occurred of $5 million, it limits the ability of the system to provide of the state to provide adequate and reasonable service. So we would argue that $43 million as a budget item with $5 million in reduced cuts has resulted in crisis for communities. And mayors and managers are here today to talk about exactly what that looks like for them and their communities. I would just close with recommendations to the legislature. First point to overturning the veto of $5 million to assist with responding to the cuts that occurred to winter service. If that doesn't occur, then I would suggest including additional funding within a fast-tracked supplemental budget. It's not our intent at all to say to, you know, present these as your only options, but I think the sense from AML is do something soon that contributes some amount of funding above at least $5 million and preferably above that to the system to address the cuts that communities have experienced. A third recommendation would be, and I think it's AML's intent and local government's intent to participate in beyond the urgency to the sustainability of the system. So for future budget conversations when it comes to the system, establishing a more sufficient, sustainable budget for FY21, including for maintenance. Include municipal leaders in decision-making processes. I know that there's a working group being formed. One of those members should be a municipal official. And when it comes to your conversations here in this committee and in any other committee that occurs within the legislature, municipal leaders need to be at the table. Finally, AML has a resolution in support of a coastal infrastructure general obligation bond. It's not impossible to consider that addressing some of the ferry system's capital needs and maintenance repair needs could be included within something like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Do we have any questions for Mr. Andreessen from this committee? Seeing none, we appreciate your time. Oh, excuse me, Representative Christ Tompkins.
Just a comment. I really appreciate AML being a voice for Coastal Alaska in this regard, and appreciate the chair making this forum possible.
Representative Story.
Thank you. I had the opportunity to attend a luncheon with the elders at Tlingit and Haida last week and heard some stories about impacts to their families. And I was wondering, in particular, one of the stories was about, since groceries were not getting into some of the communities, they were having to be flown in, and there was a backup with the airplanes that service the areas. And people were having to say, well, one story was needing milk for a young one and trying to bump the milk to get up farther, and medicines too, even though it's like, it doesn't seem that big, but it's just, there's many people who have been, I guess, hearing this. And the other elders expressed just not the opportunities to see their family members living in Juneau and not being able to come in. And so I'm wondering if AML has talked about doing anything. Well, one of the members said declare it a disaster area and get the governor to put some resources into communities that way. But I was wondering if you had talked about any way to make extra runs, how to help out some of those smaller communities who are really hurting for basic services.
Yeah. Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Story. I think we've been hearing similar stories in response to the resolutions that AML members passed in November. What we've done is to establish something like a fairy caucus within the Alaska Municipal League, which will help, I think, contribute to future solutions, to add more constructive responses and inputs into decision making at the state level, and to gathering that kind of information. So I'm hopeful that AML members can be actively and will have a role in coordinating their responses to exactly those kinds of situations.
Thank you. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Very interesting presentation. I find it absolutely fascinating that the spending per passenger is almost twice other tourists on the marine highway system. I think we need more ferries and more ferry passengers, and you can't do it if you're not running ships. The other thing that I noted, when I learned how much of its costs the ferry system raises by fares and freight, something like 42% of the cost of operating the system, and asked which other highways in the state generate that kind of revenue. It's not possible to generate revenue if the ferries aren't running. People can't buy tickets if they're not running. So it's absolutely crucial that we get this system running again. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, and thank you for taking your time and for your presentation. With that, I would like to start invited testimony. We, of course, are running a little late due to our session. I'm not going to put a time limit on testifiers, but if you could keep it somewhere in the area of 5 minutes, I'm sure that others that are testifying would appreciate that. And so with that, I do have a letter from the mayor of Anchorage, Mayor Berkowitz. He was unable to attend. He was hoping he could. He cannot. He did send a letter and asked that it be read into the record, so I am going to do that. Dear Representative Stutes and Wohl, before Alaska had oil, the pipeline, or the Dalton Highway, we had the marine highway system. In a state without roads, we rely on our waterways to be our highways. For more than 50 years, ferries have linked our communities, spurred economic development, and been a source of statewide identity and pride. Through the boom and the bust, Alaskans prioritize the transportation system that connects us. Anchorage is an Alaska marine highway system. Even though we do not have a ferry dock, Anchorage benefits from a financial and robust marine highway system. Anchorage is the top destination for Alaska marine highway system travelers. More than half the visitors who travel on the Alaska marine highway system pass through Anchorage. These visitors typically spend $1,700 per person during the course of their Alaska visit compared to $1,300 for other travelers. In a city where tourism industry accounts for 1 in 9 jobs, we benefit from the prosperity of the Alaska Marine Highway System and what it delivers. Goods and services from some 500 businesses support the daily operation of the Alaska Marine Highway System, resulting in an infusion of millions of dollars throughout the Alaska economy. Anchorage businesses receive the third highest share of that spending. And Anchorage is a destination and a way station for many of our Prince William Sound neighbors who come here to shop, to socialize, for medical care, and for onward travel. We also use the ferry ourselves. Anchorage and Matsu account for 15% of the Alaska Marine Highway System revenue from Alaskans. Just as we expect the state to maintain the Glen and Seward highways, as well as the many roads inside the municipality, we count on the state to maintain our marine highway system. And while we enjoy the drive to Whittier, I look forward to the day when the Alaska Marine Highway Systems get a berth in Anchorage. Ethan Berkowitz. And with that, we will go on to our invited public testimony who happened to be here. With that, we will start with Mayor Jan Hill from Haines. And let's see, here we go. Mayor Hill. Is everybody here? Is anybody online? Oh, wait. Welcome.
Thank
you. If you'd identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
My name is Jan Hill. I'm the mayor of the Haynesboro, and I also have serve on the Alaska Municipal League Board of Directors. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I would be testifying before a transportation committee meeting, but one of my fondest memories of the Alaska Marine Highway System was in 1963 when I stood on the dock playing my clarinet to welcome the first ferry with my mother and her father on board. We knew that was going to change our lives a great deal in our small community, and it did. And we love the ferry system. We love the ferries. This last couple of years have caused us to struggle for many reasons. Our businesses are struggling. Our school kids are struggling to travel. This is our highway system. This is how our kids get to the other schools and the other communities, and likewise how other students get to our community. We are an aging community in Haines, and we are very concerned about the lack of ferry service for health reasons. I recently had a friend who had to spend a week in Juneau for about a 3-hour medical appointment because of bad weather and no ferries. That has impacted more families than I can even count. We have businesses that are closed or have very limited hours right now. It's almost impossible to go out to dinner in Haines because the restaurants aren't open in the wintertime, and a lot of it is because of the lack of ferries. You've heard Mr. Andreessen's comments. I would just like to ditto every single one of them. I thank Madam Chair for your comments at the beginning of this hearing. You're spot on. We need more money. We've connected the dots. We know that. I think that you will see more, but I think you've seen some pretty creative ideas come before you and come before our legislature and the governor, and you'll see more of that. We need to continue to work better together as communities and as communities and groups like this group that I'm a part of today. We need to work better with our legislature, and I think we're on the right path. It's been rare that we've had the support from people in the interior for our marine highway system, but we have been able to demonstrate to them through some of our working groups that Haines might not be the destination for someone getting off the ferry in Haines, but we are a pass-through community in that sense. If they can't get off the ferry in Haines, they can't get to your community either, and I think that point is critical. We, because we have the the ferry docking in Haines, those people that get off there can get to Anchorage and Fairbanks. We have military families coming both directions coming through Haines, and all of that has been impacted this year. We've got businesses that can't get the materials that they need to conduct business, and therefore they're laying off people and or having being open limited hours. We can survive with less ferry service than we grew accustomed to, but we can't survive with none. And I think that I would appeal to you to listen to the recommendations that you're going to hear from many of us today and throughout this session, and call on us and let us help you work through this problem. We know we need more money, and we know there isn't much there. So I guess our next job is just to become more creative and figure out ways to make this work. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from this committee? Seeing none, thank you very much, and thank you for traveling here for your testimony. Next, we have Brad Ryan from Skagway. Welcome to the Transportation Committee. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Yeah, thank you. This is Brad Ryan. I represent the municipality of Skagway. I'm the borough manager there.
Thank you.
And thank you. I think probably most of you know that Skagway is a cruise ship town, and it's doing quite well there at 1 million passengers a year. But what really concerns me is we also have, and maybe people aren't aware of it, we're one of the few populations that is growing in Southeast Alaska, and our school appears to be booming. We're in the middle of a design to expand the school to accommodate the students. And in the same breath, while that seems to be happening, we also hear with the current ferry schedule and the way things are going that families are that have been there for decades are ready to move out because they can't get their children in and out to sports, medical facilities, appointments, etc. And so one of our biggest fears is that what will really become is a cruise ship port that is open from April 23rd till October 7th, and then we'll shutter the doors, and I'll be the borough manager that sits there with nobody in the community. So while on one level Skagway is a prosperous small community and we're growing, on the other level, I don't think it's going to take much change in the connection to the rest of Alaska to change that direction and put us backwards. And where now we're a growing community, a growing school, and it's exciting. If you saw the preschool right now, it's actually somewhat intimidating with the number of students that are coming on. So I appreciate any efforts that you might put into maintaining the ferry service, especially the wintertime ferry service. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan, for your testimony. Is there any questions from this committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to Mayor Steve from Wrangell, and I'm not even going to attempt the last name because I know I would butcher it. Say it again, please.
That is Steve Persunka, and I'm the mayor of the city and borough of Wrangell.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity to testify. I know that my colleagues are going to express concerns about freight coming in and out and the ability for residents to move back and forth. But there's another element that I want you to consider as you're looking at either contracting or expanding the ferry service, and that is one of emergency services to mariners. Our ferry system provides a safety net to mariners throughout the coast, and we've had numerous examples of the ferry being at the right place at the right time and saving lives. Recently, in August of 2019, they saved three fishermen whose vessel had sunk. This has happened many times in Alaskan waters and in the Inside Passage as well. Recently, the U.S. Coast Guard came to Wrangell and spoke to us about the new cruise ships that will be plying the waters in Alaska, sort of the mega ship concept that we could have 3,000 to 5,000 people in distress at any given time. And what are our plans to help accommodate those folks if there's an emergency out in front of where we live? Well, our town is 2,500 people. Our sewage system's designed for 3,500 people, so we got a problem right there, right off the bat. We wouldn't probably be able to produce enough water. So one of the things that we said is, hey, we've got the ferry system. We have a major disaster with the cruise ship out front. We should be diverting all the ferries towards Wrangell. We've got deep water port. We can anchor them up, lighter them out to there. there's a medical emergency that causes a quarantine on a boat, we could have additional services brought into us. So when we're thinking about the ferry, yes, transportation is one really important element. But the second element is our own security as a state. We're a maritime state, and this gives us these ships give us the opportunity to move goods and people anywhere we need to at any time. So I view this as a larger point for convincing your colleagues about the importance of the ferry. It's a part of our natural disaster planning process. So I hope that we're able to convince some of the other folks that maybe don't see the ferries the same value that we do. And that's it. I'll let my colleagues pick up all the other great points.
Thank you. And again, as all of you, I appreciate that all of you took the time to travel here. We appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions for the mayor? Seeing none.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Next, we have Mayor Calvin Cassipet from Gustavus. And if you would state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Calvin Cassipet. I'm the mayor of the city of Gustavus. I'm not going to repeat some of the points that Nils did. He did a great job. I wanted to bring your attention to the situation we have in Gustavus. I think most coastal communities have, an AML, Alaska Marine Lines barge landing or a Samson barge landing or something like that. We don't have that in Gustavus. We have a little river that a small landing craft can get up and unload. 80-foot max landing craft can get up there. So our opportunity to get freight, heavy freight in containers, is, without the ferries, we don't get that. And our one grocery store in town gets basically all their food, all their building items off the ferry from Juneau. Without the ferry, we're lost. We don't know how we're going to, for instance, prepare for tourist season. We get a lot of independent tourists through Gustavus. Without having the ferries for the B&Bs and the lodges to set up and their employees to come in, we're at a loss. We're trying to find some ways to get folks in this spring, but we're struggling. And it's part of it is due to our ferry dock being rebuilt. That's great. It's wonderful that we're getting a new ferry dock. But at some point we're going to have to talk about the ferries that go there, right? And the summer schedule that just got published this morning leads me to be really concerned when we're only getting two ferries every 2 weeks. That's just not going to work with our tourism-based businesses in town. I'll be sending that stuff into the department when the time comes by their February 3rd due date. But that's just some of the things that I'm dealing with. I mean, the same stuff. Travel for medical. With 1 week of no ferries or one ferry a week, I don't know how we get to doctor's appointments. I know when I broke my ankle last winter, having a ferry there on Mondays and Wednesdays worked great because I was able to make my doctor's appointments on Tuesdays, come in on Monday, leave on a Wednesday. It worked great. Go see the doctor for my broken ankle. Without it, and getting into a plane with a broken ankle ain't so easy either. I tried it. It was much nicer to get on a ferry with a busted up ankle on crutches. So anyway, that's all I had. I'm going to leave my time for the rest of the folks and respect your time as well.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none, again, we appreciate your coming. Next, we have Mayor Joshua Bowen from Angoon. Welcome, Mayor. If you'd state your name and your affiliation for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Joshua Bowen, and I am the mayor of Angoon. Thank you guys for giving us the time to talk here. I'm here to testify in favor of some additional funding as soon as possible for the Alaska Marine Highway System. All my fellow mayors behind me I think you all have a pretty good idea of the common issues that we are all facing, travel, medical travel, freight, getting things like food and supplies, schools not being able to afford sports travel because it all has to go through the planes now, and transportation issues that are centered around the lack of flights due to weather and space limitations. I just want to focus my testimony on a couple of issues that I think might be getting overlooked, and I think they are very important, and you guys should all consider them, or I ask that you guys consider them. Specifically, I have an example. One of my constituents, I guess you would call them, from Angoon, finally made it out of Angoon yesterday to a flight to get her daughter's knee checked out. Her daughter's been having some major pain issues for the last good solid 3 weeks or so, and they've been trying to fly out, and due to the weather issues that we've been having and the lack of flights when weather does clear up, they've had to reschedule twice now. This is the third time that they've attempted to get up there. They were successful this time, but the issue that that I have with it is that they're spending 2 days in Anchorage without any appointments. Today and tomorrow, no appointments, and this is all on Medicaid's dollar, which is, you know, through the state. So I'm just not sure if everyone's been considering that side of the picture here. Had there been ferry service, without a doubt, they would have been able to make it out on the ferry and easily get from Juneau to Anchorage. It's a lot easier that way than to get to Angoon to Juneau. Another one that's really just breaks my heart is this year we had a new teacher start at the beginning of this year. He was a very, very high energy and very positive influence on all of our children. He took over he didn't take it over. He brought back the school's cross-country program. They haven't had the cross-country program in several years. And there's an age range of students that are able to compete in cross-country events. However, he was able to round up about 99% of all the kids in town, and they were all collectively running up and down the streets all through town, and it was a nice thing to see. Over the winter break, he was unable to get out without a ferry, and he was unable to fly out when he wanted to, so he ended up getting out on a plane, and he didn't come back. He said that, unfortunately, because of the isolation and the uncertainty about whether he could get in and out of town, he felt so isolated that he just couldn't come back, and he turned in his resignation. He came from Kotzebue, and he left our school for what he calls isolation issues. Everyone's talked about the freight, but, I mean, we had a ferry this weekend on Saturday, and on Monday it was our last ferry until March 3rd. On that ferry was a very large van with a local flight company's logo on the side. It took three vehicles over on the Angoon side to unload this van full of all this freight and mail so that it could be delivered over there in Angoon. This happened because the capabilities of the company, they just couldn't handle all this freight and all the passengers that we've been getting lately. And a big part of that is because the weather, and I'm sure you guys have seen in the news, we can't even send refrigerated stuff over to Angoon right now because they just don't have the room, and they can't guarantee that it'll make it to Angoon before it goes bad. We also have several projects coming up in Angoon. And, you know, undoubtedly these projects will cost a lot more if we're not able to utilize the ferry to transport the materials needed for those projects. And then this winter over Thanksgiving, there was a lot of pressure on myself and my city council to provide a solution for the lack of ferry service. So we unanimously voted to charter a catamaran from Juneau to Angoon and back on two days apart from each other. Because of the uncertainty around the timing and the weather for this catamaran, I spent a solid week taking people's names down and numbers and trying to coordinate these catamaran runs. The total cost of these catamarans was $13,000. We only received just over $5,000 in money back through the fare box. So the city took on an $8,000 loss for these two catamarans. Our locally generated revenues are nowhere near high enough to sustain doing this regularly. And quite frankly, I don't really see that as a local government responsibility. I mean, you guys, no one would expect a little city to cut a road to the next city over. In my experience, that would be either the state or the federal government's obligation to connect these towns. That's just some of the reasons that, in addition to what everyone else has said, but those are some, hopefully, not too specific, but wait, well, specific is fine, right? So I would ask that you guys consider additional funding either through a veto override of the $5 million veto from Governor Dunleavy last year, or a fast-track supplemental to get at least a reasonable level of service to our coastal communities as soon as possible. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity and my fellow mayors to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has any.
Thank you, Mayor Bowen. Questions, Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor Bowen, a couple of questions, I think mostly for contextual reference for other members or anybody listening in. Does Yangoon have a barge landing?
We do not receive barge service. We have, oh, sorry, through the chair. We have like half of a barge landing, and we do not get regular barge service, but no.
Follow-up?
Certainly,
Does Yangoon have a landing strip?
Through the chair, not right now. Everything is seaplane. So we do have a project coming up here in the next. Construction is supposed to start by 2021 on a three-year project to get a 3,300-foot runway in Yangoon. But as of right now, the only way to get anything in and out of Yangoon is through a seaplane on pontoons.
Great. Thank you. And Madam Chair, if I may make a comment, these facts, these relative isolation, even compared to, say, a community like Kotzebue, I was surprised that these facts weren't known necessarily to certain agency staff when planning was being done in the initial months of the governor's administration, which, I mean, I think the relative reliance on the ferry system and some of these very community-specific details and facts about Yangoon, you know, was concerning because the stakes are really high, as I thought your testimony really helpfully illuminated.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Bowen, for your testimony. We appreciate it. Next, we have Terry Haynes from representing Kodiak. He is a city council member from Kodiak. Terry, if you would state your name and affiliation. Nice to see you, Terry.
Nice to see you, Chairman Stutes. And thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Terry Haynes. I'm a longtime resident of Kodiak and currently serve on the Kodiak City Council. And I'm here to ask you to find a way to fund the Alaska Marine Highway System to a base level of service to its port communities. I'm not here to tell you the system doesn't need fixing. I'm here to suggest that it's unfair to the users, that is, businesses and individuals that well utilize the system, to severely curtail sailings right now. Because the Alaska Marine Highway System, like all transportation infrastructure, is an economic enabler, and its users have made great use of it. In Kodiak, home builders, fishermen, retailers, service providers all depend on the Alaska Marine Highway System. In my outreach prior to coming here, I asked people how they use the system. Accessing goods and services in other parts of Alaska was the most popular response. The routes of the Marine Highway are like economic arteries that link Alaska's economy. And the users that are holding up their end of the bargain, they use the system to circulate value in the Alaska economy. They're like the heart of our economy. I don't think that any doctor, if he saw that the arteries were leaking a little, would choose to treat a swollen foot by putting a tourniquet on it and cutting off all circulation. I think you need to try to save that foot and save the entire body, and in this case, the economic body of Alaska, by treating the problems as they arise, but not by cutting off our extremities, essentially, and curtailing our economy unnecessarily. And I would also add that the Marine Highway adds to the viability of the ports and harbors that it visits. And port viability is part of Alaska's future. I think that Alaska has a bright future, and a lot, part of that bright future is going to be in robust ports and harbors in the coming reality of global warming and economies that are going to shift and change. The ferry is part of the puzzle piece that keeps our ports and harbors healthy. It generates economy, and it is just part of that whole piece that keeps it going. I'd also add that in Kodiak, we have a large Coast Guard population, one of the largest Coast Guard bases mm-hmm. in the nation. And for the Coast Guard who serve us, they go out there and save our lives when they have a chance. But they're, like most armed forces, not the most highly paid individuals in the world. For them, quality of life, the ability to get into their Jeep and hit the ferry and access the entirety of Alaska is a really big thing, and I don't think it should be undervalued. And finally, I would leave you just with one more analogy, if you'll indulge me. I don't think it's wise to starve the chickens to death in an attempt to cut the price of eggs. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Haynes, any questions? I will just make one slight correction. That's fine. Kodiak's Coast Guard base is not one of the largest. It is the largest, just for the record. Next, we have Mayor Copeland from Cordova. Mayor Copeland, nice to see you. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Clay Copeland, Mayor of the City of Cordova. And thank you, Chairman Stutz, for calling this hearing on the first day of the session. I think it's very important, given the importance of transportation, along with energy and available workforce as a pillar of our economy. I think the best way to communicate is our support for some short-term funding and some long-term solutions is to just tell a story. And it's not a story of want and despair. It's a story of economic opportunity and frustration. So just a little background for the committee, and I'd welcome some communications at the ends. When I saw the opportunity through the planning process in the comparison between building a $1 billion highway out of Cordova to rebuilding the railroad that used to be there to what ultimately was recognized as the cost-effective marine transportation, I saw an opportunity for the community, so I moved away from City Council at that time into Prince William Sound Economic Development, where we co-authored a marketing plan for Prince William Sound ahead of the Fast Ferry Chenega going into service, where we worked with partners. If I could back up here, we even designed this Cordova Center on the left of this picture to have the seating for 250 people, because that's the passenger size of the Chenega. So Cordova's not a community that's had the resources or frankly, until recently, the political support to make poor decisions. And our economy was pretty much collapsed after the Exxon Valdez oil spill. So we are very into the importance of transportation and making it successful as a linchpin of our economy. And we've been successful. For the last 10 years, we've ranked on average as the 11th largest seafood port in the United States. The decade before that, we were 26th largest. So how do we get there? The state made millions, tens of millions of dollars of investments in renewable energy projects, as did the community of Cordova, as did the federal government through tribal energy programs. And we created stable, reliable, and affordable rates, electrical rates, in our community. And when I recognized, as the utility manager of the electric utility, the similarities between the long life infrastructure, the high capital cost infrastructure, and the labor driven and fuel driven cost of an energy system, I realized that's something that I could contribute to by participating on the Marine Transportation Advisory Board for 7 years. And we've had solutions along the way. We have the brain trust within our ranks to know how to operate a system affordably and effectively. And yet we find ourselves in this situation of really a system as broken as I've ever seen it. So as we built up this economy and built a 3-year ferry schedule and built a fantastic routes in Prince William Sound and connections with our partners in your districts and across the state, we came as close as I saw any run to paying for itself directly, just through the ridership and revenues, not to mention all the ancillary benefits and the economy that it supports. So to have the ferry service suddenly and unexpectedly canceled in early September this year, and to not have service until now, as I looked 2 hours ago at the summer schedule that's been released into restoring service on May 20th, I just want to share some of the implications of that, because our economy, our $100 million economy of 1,000 permit holders in Prince William Sound, is in a sector that is 94% imports into the U.S. Seafood imports are now in the top five trade imbalances in the United States, to the tune of $15 billion last year. As our shellfish farmers and kelp farmers have been getting their permits this last winter, as we have an opportunity to grow into our underutilized winter infrastructure, working with Representative Stutes and the commissioners in Fish and Game to restore fisheries that now have viable populations again, we can easily be in the top five, and much, if not most, of that economy goes through Anchorage. A lot more of it than stays in Cordova, frankly. So 30% of those fishermen are in Cordova, 40% are in other communities in the state, 30% live outside. So that looks like 120 permit holders in Wasilla, 100 permit holders in Anchorage, 100 permit holders in Homer. This is a statewide economy, and as we have these great fisheries and opportunities, fishermen and tenders are coming from all over the state to participate. So where we find ourselves now, again, is a closed highway right as fishermen are trying to get their boats, trailers, and equipment home, and their families and RVs home. We have people over in Anchorage for medical. One resident had to induce labor to get the rest of her family and her vehicles and stuff back to Cordova. We appreciate the Alaska Marine Highway System trying to work with the resources they have to provide service, but frankly, it's not working. We asked for April 15th service to get our fleets over there and start our Copper River fishery. This is something that Cordova has worked hard to set a marketing standard for the entire state. It's why we're getting $75 a pound retail for Copper River king salmon, $2.50 a pound to silver fishermen, to the fishermen. We had 4 million pounds of silver salmon delivered in 2018 at $2.50 a pound. That's $10 million fishery. And that moves back and forth on the ferries, and much of it moves to Copper River Seafoods, born in Cordova, that employs hundreds of people in Anchorage and was just voted the U.S. Workforce Development Company by the federal and state organizations nationally. So we need some bridge funding, and we need a system that will work going into the future, because, frankly, we've been repeating too many of the mistakes over and over and taking successes off the table and reverting to things that don't work. So with that, I would just like to make myself available for questions. I think I'm just in a position to share some very honest feedback on studies and committees and where we're at and where we could be. Because my vision for this system is to be a world leader. Why are we trying to create a sustainable ferry system and skating to where the puck has been when we could be out in front? Let's use our shipyards and build the ferries and fishing boats, multi-purpose, holistic vehicles of the future. Why aren't we doing it in our energy industry and in our telecommunications industries and in our airlines industries? They patent all those technologies that are developed in Alaska because we're in a tough place and it's hard for us to compete on a dollar-by-dollar basis. We have to be smart and agile to do that. So we're not drawing on our internal resources right here in Alaska to solve this problem. And I don't want to just operate a system. I want to be the model. You know, I don't want to follow best practices. We should be establishing them for tomorrow. So,
Mayor Copeland, thank you. Are there questions for the mayor? Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mayor, for your testimony. Just to follow up, you mentioned April 15th is needing service by April 15th. Based on your current understanding, when, if ever, is ferry service supposed to return to Cordova under the current funding scenario?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, right now the summer schedule that was just released was May 20th. Frankly, I hope some quick funding now can help. If the supplemental requested last fall had happened, we would have had time to work on the vessels and get one in operation. I just hope we still have time to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Drummond.
No questions, just a comment. You answered a lot of my questions in late July when I had the privilege of joining the chair of the committee and the co-chair, Adam Wool, in your fair city in the Cordova Center, which you just described to the public. And it was packed. I understand there were 250 people there, mm-hmm. and I believe 55 people testified to us that mm-hmm. afternoon. And I got an extremely good feel for the commitment of Cordova and their support of the ferry system. And I know, for one, I will do all I can to restore your service. It's completely unfair to attempt to destroy your fishing community and everything else about Cordova by, Terry said, killing the chickens to make the eggs cheaper. That makes no sense. and I'm sorry, you yeah. did. I do have a question. You said that you have gotten as close to fully covering the costs of service as you've ever seen it. Was that one specific ferry, or just the just more than one ship serve Cordova when it's actually running?
Representative Drummond, thank you for attending that hearing in Cordova, and to you through the chair. That was the Fast Ferry Chiniga. That was the outcome of years and years and years of DOT planning that started with a regional plan. It had a $13 million dock and maintenance facility construction in Cordova. It had dock upgrades in Valdez. Mm-hmm. We, like I said, our own regional marketing plan, built an entire marketing plan, and we promoted that ferry. It stayed in that Prince William Sound for less than a year. It's one of the systemic problems is moving these things all over like pawns and not giving crews and captains the opportunity to live locally and have some kind of surety, mm-hmm. to learn the water and learn the routes, and that propagates downstream mm-hmm. into a vessel emergency that ended up with self-imposed restrictions. People think that you can't run those vessels in Prince William Sound because of the weather. No, they were designed to run in that, mm-hmm. and if the stabilizers had been installed on the vessel, it would have made it even better. But again, this is a systemic problem between the legislature, the governor's office of commissioners, and AMHS. We need to get this governance and management right because it's just not working.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Yeah, just a comment. I mean, I think Mayor Coplin, your last comment about the schizophrenic management decisions of the ferry system, which is just a statement of like the fact of the governance of the system, not any one administration, where every 4 to 8 years there's a radically different vision for what things should be. And every time there's a different vision, there's $50 million of brick and mortar investment in different terminal configurations. And if you were to just amass the sheer amount of money that has basically been wasted because one administration control Z undoes the previous administration's decisions, it's just inane. And I really hope the legislature, I mean, I know I'm supportive of it, can look at a different management and governance model where we stop doing that. And the one other comment I want to make, which is in reference to Mayor Hill and her opening comments, and there's a lot of coastal legislators around the table here, and we've all been supportive of ferries. There's a misconception in coastal Alaska that it's only coastal legislators who support the ferry system. And since I've been here in 2012, a huge number of my Rail Belt colleagues have been steadfast supporters of the ferry system. Not all of them in actions and words, especially actions, not all of them, but good number of them have. And I think that's worth noting because this is often framed in Rail Belt versus coastal Alaska terms. And it's just not true. It's an easy framing. But there are a lot of Rail Belt legislators who have not just talked the talk, but walked the walk in terms of supporting the ferry system. And I thought Mayor Berkowitz's letter was a good example of that, even though he's not presently a legislator.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Story.
Yeah, if I heard you right, you were serving on the MTAB board, have mm-hmm. been for several years. And I see the recommendation about the $5 million in override money or a fast track supplemental. Have you looked at what service level you would need with those monies? Has the board talked about that, and has the board, and do you bring your recommendations to DOT, or what is your level of communication so that can be informed decision making and recommendation to the legislature?
Representative Story, to you through the chair, I no longer serve on the MTAB. We worked for years to get a three-year schedule in place that started rapidly growing revenues. We got our one other priority request, and understand that committee was in place and working to do what was best for the system, not for their individual community or their district. The other one is to get two runs a year out the Illusion Chain to support their infrastructure and needs. I no longer serve on that board by choice. When I saw the same mistakes getting repeated, when I saw that board no longer having the engagement or frankly being listened to, and when I saw those things being undone, I felt like, frankly, it was a waste of time. As to the recommendations, I contacted the DOT early and often, the commissioner, deputy commissioner, Captain Falvey, and gave a whole suite of scenarios running from what we felt like was absolute baseline service. I talked directly to the unions. I manage a union shop where I work, and we see them as assets, not as liabilities and obligations, as the new study points out. And we also see them as residents and partners. But we laid scenarios out from a minimum baseline service clear up to an absolute scorched earth of April 15th, starting as early as this March correspondence in 2019. And the ball just kept getting cooked down the road, down the road, down the road. And now we're, as I mentioned earlier, well beyond the April 15th. This is going to cripple our economy. And understand, Cordova's going to survive. We're good at that. We've done it for a long time. It's not going to boom us. It's not going to bust us if the ferry is or isn't there. What it does is changes us from a growth trajectory where we're growing our and Alaska and our partner communities' economies to one right now that's in economic decline. And that's probably going to be our new trajectory until we get this marine highway system or some viable alternative in place. So did that answer your question?
Follow-up, Representative Story.
I guess it's more of a comment on knowing that you've given some specific recommendations have gone to the Department of Transportation. Will there be an opportunity to have those priced out by DOT just so we know the level of service needed, what the cost of that would be for our purposes and looking out of how to fund a service that is not going to hamper the economy?
Representative Story, I can answer that. My office is currently working on that.
Thank you.
So,
Mayor Copeland, thank you.
Thank you for the much. Opportunity.
Next, we will have Cassidy Cameron from before Cassidy comes up, I would like to recognize my friend Representative Knopp, who thinks he's going to sneak out the door, but we're not going to let him. Oh, thank you. Cassidy, thank you. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Cassidy Cameron. I'm the city manager for the city of Soldovia. Which, by the way, is just right across the bay from Homer, so just so you know. And I did not take a ferry to get here. I want to thank you today for taking the time to hold these meetings and discussions with this group, especially at the top of your legislative session. It not only shows that the state ferry is of utmost importance to you, but that it shows that this continued challenge is still a priority for the state and for lawmakers and its delegations. I hope that over this past year you've really listened to testimonies and read the resolutions and the letters and heard Alaskans speak, just as today we're all telling the same story with different details, and it's the truth. We are all in the same boat. We have different roles and different positions and different tax structures, different revenues, different resources. But the one thing that is steady through this is that we all rely on transportation, and the ferry service is our highway. It is our sewered highway. It is the way that we get back and forth to do business to have medical appointments, to shop, to get materials, to build our houses, to build businesses, and to build our economies and our communities. Without it, we start to fizzle out and die. The city of Soldovia, we've had really flat growth in the last 15 to 20 years, and I'm proud to say that in the last 5 to 7 years, we've shown a little bit of growth. A little bit goes a long way with us. We have a slight increase in the population. Our population is getting younger. We have more children. We have more people trying to open businesses and do business in Soldovia and live and work there. They appreciate the quality of life. Part of all of that is the ferry system. If that goes away, it cripples us. It cuts us off from the rest of the world and from opportunities that we feel that we deserve. I want to say that I really hope that through all of these conversations and through this information that you are gathering, that this is an opportunity to gain a lot of knowledge. There's a lot of knowledge to be shared, as you guys are all finding out right now. And please consider municipalities and local leaders as, you know, assets and individuals that you can call upon to give specific testimonies or give specific details about what's happening in their communities. I'd like to give just a really good example of what's happening in our community right now. It's very cold in Soldovia, unseasonably. It was 11 when I left yesterday, and it's about, it's in the teens today. It's supposed to get down in the single digits. So that means that a lot of people are using a lot of heating oil. We have one fuel station in our community. Heating oil is $5 and above a gallon. A lot of people are burning a lot of oil right now. Without a ferry system, previously when the ferry was running, it just stopped running a few weeks ago, and we don't have another ferry until the end of April. But what people would do, it's more cost effective to buy a ferry ticket, load 2 50-gallon drums onto their vehicles, take the ferry over to Homer, fill up those drums, stay in a hotel, eat out at the restaurants, do all of their grocery shopping, and come back on the next day or the next ferry run. And it was still more cost effective for them to heat their homes by doing that than purchasing locally. By not having that option, they're putting a strain on their cost of living. Their incomes are being utilized in ways that they weren't anticipating, and our quality of life diminishes. So as I was thinking about the conundrum and the money issue that the state is having and the ferry is having, I didn't get any answers. I just got more questions, but I really hope that some solutions can be found. Short term, we are hoping the city of Soldovia passed a resolution to override the veto, but also just any short term supplemental funding that you can find and muster up would be fantastic. Long term, I think this needs to be these issues and the systematic problems that DOT is facing need to be really sussed out and identified and worked out to have a better future for everybody, for all Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you. Thank you for coming, for your testimony. And I'm going to just mention at this point, if any of you have written testimony any testifiers have written testimony, if you could send it to my office electronically, I'd appreciate it. Next, we will have Norm Carson from Pelican. Welcome. If you would state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you. Madam Chair Stutes, committee members, my name is Norm Carson. Testified here last year, as I recall. Yeah, I'm here representing the city of Pelican. I'm president of our Chamber of Commerce. I also serve on MTAB, here primarily for the city. This year, our last ferry that we have seen was in October. It was done, and there was no notice on that. We didn't realize there would not be another ferry. There's not going to be another ferry in the foreseeable future, mainly because only two ferries can serve our town, the Aurora or the Lacani. Both were in layup this year for repairs. Only one can be repaired. Lacani's under repair now. It will not come back to Pelican. It's going to Prince William Sound this summer, so we will be without service unless there's some sort of contract alternate service provided for the town. Really, there's nothing that can completely replace the Lacani or the Aurora because they offered roll-on, roll-off freight. When the large freight lines left Southeast Alaska to haul the frozen fish product out in the 1990s, I would say, we switched to value added. That's a smaller product. Pelican, we were in the dumps for a while because we were a 4 to 6 million pound of frozen fish a year. So we about went out of business, but then a young energetic couple came in and started a value added business. And we are on the way back up again. We've got a hydro system, we've got electricity. Now we need transportation. Now that leg of our economy is gone. So we support whatever you can do in the supplemental, and particularly in FY21, we would love to see the Aurora come back out service until we can transition into a smaller ferry that's suitable for the small market ports in Southeast Alaska. We don't, you know, if we can get into a smaller one, it would do great for the little towns. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Mayor, for coming and testifying before us. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, next we'll have Dennis Robinson from Unalaska. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Dennis Robinson. I'm Vice Mayor of the City of Unalaska. I'm also on the AML board. And as was stated earlier, Unalaska, we don't get a whole lot of ferry traffic, but the traffic that we do get contributes greatly to the economy of the state. We're in a situation in Unalaska where we've had a great economy. And when we generally have about a $20 million capital budget annually. And in doing so, we look to Alaska for contractors for doing that work. And by eliminating the ferry travel out there, we were at two times a month from May through September. By eliminating that, it's putting the contractors that we award contracts to at a disadvantage over contractors in the lower 48, because they rely on getting their equipment, getting the supplies out on those ferries at a cheaper rate than they do than is commercial, or from all the commercial lines. You know, we have plenty of shipping out there. We have a number of barges every week. We have three to five export ships a week, and a domestic ship weekly, a container ship from Matson. Those primarily go to Unalaska with fish from the rest of the state on. We run roughly 67,000 containers of fish, frozen fish, out of there annually. And it's a staggering number, but so the barges are going out there full of fish and generally don't have room for the equipment and that type of stuff, which leaves them to Matson, and it's a little higher price on the ships. Some of the dimensions of some of the materials that they're building don't quite fit on a 40-foot flat. So, I mean, it creates problems. But we look to try to keep money in the state. That's the only way this state is going to an economy is going to exist in the state, is if we try to keep the money in the state. And we need to build this Marine Highway out to where it is, it benefits those communities, not only ours, but largely for the contract work that we have out there is contractors from Anchorage, from the Matsu Valley, some from Fairbanks. We're looking at building out the geothermal resource out there. It's a private venture, which will basically take Unalaska off the PCE list. But that's a $500 million project. I'd love to see that go to an Alaska firm. But, you know, there's no guarantees. It's going to, you know, being that it's not a public contract that's going to be let, but it's going to be a private one. They're going to cut costs, and they're going to cut them where maybe we don't, you know, as council members and that don't see that the benefit to the state of Alaska in that. So for us, that is the biggest point. We are a hub community for some of the smaller communities in the region, where and I don't know what they're going to do this time. When we're looking at two ferries in May now, and a suggested two ferries in September, but the pink van, the mammogram van, comes out on the ferry, and we have. It'll stay that out there for generally, you know, it'd stay for a couple of cycles of the ferry, but that would allow the women from these other communities to come in to Unalaska, not only to, you know, to get their mammograms and that, the health care, but also to shop for groceries. A lot of the smaller communities don't have the ability, you know, they don't have large stores. So they'll shop groceries in Unalaska. You know, we get probably 50% of the groceries that supplies the Bering Sea comes out of Anchorage. The other 50% probably comes with the vessels and stuff that hail out of Seattle. But we'd like to see that remain in Alaska, and build our economy. And the Alaska Marine Highway is an integral part of building that economy. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for coming down from Unalaska. That's quite a trip.
We actually came up from Unalaska.
Oh, well, yeah.
Okay. We're further south than Ketchikan.
All right. I stand to be corrected. Thank you, sir. Are there any questions from this committee? Seeing none, thank you again.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next we have Chelsea Tremblay from Petersburg. Welcome. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Hi, I'm Chelsea Tremblay. I'm an assembly member from Petersburg. And thank you so much for your time. I know it's been a long first day already, so I'm just going to tell you a few quick stories. My family story is a ferry story. My parents met in Craig and in the mid-80s, and they got married and they started their family, and they were, they're both from the lower 48. They were concerned about the level of isolation that they would deal with medical care-wise in Craig at the time. So they left, they put in for a transfer, they went to Idaho and Eastern Washington, and then they really missed Alaska. So we all came up, my sister and I, we came up on the ferry and resettled back into Petersburg, and I grew up there, and the way of life that we knew and expected was really possible because of the Marine Highway system. And now being back home and I'm starting my own family, my fiance and I brought up our own car and the last of his stuff last year on the ferry system. And that was us really taking a leap of faith into this life again, you know, deciding that we were just going to assume that this was going to get worked out. And now here we are, and I'm getting a little flustered. This is my first time testifying. See, it's almost impossible for us to get here. I couldn't afford it if I weren't an assembly member to come up and testify. And I'm a little tired because day before yesterday, I woke up at 3 a.m. to get Representative Christ Tompkins's car off the ferry from Sitka. So 3 a.m., roll down, some construction equipment comes off, get the car, and it's parked in front of my house. I'm assuming it's fine, and it has to wait until the next ferry to get it to Juneau. So just your own colleagues are having to deal with the intricacies of this system, and not everyone has a network of friends willing to wake up at 3 a.m. to go identify a stranger's car. I hope this is the right one, because I'm taking it, and it's going to be at my... And so, you know, you're hearing from an army of experts. There's been all these reports. There's been all of this. And it's really just a lot of us asking for the faith that we have in this body and in the system to be reciprocated, that we know our system, we know our communities, and we know what we need. And so when we're here testifying, we're just asking for it to be heard. And so thank you for your time and for all the work that you're doing. And just getting this back online as soon as possible. Some of the stories, you know, it was a great cost to the borough to decide to send me, and really we're lucky. We have freight potential. We have an airstrip, but so many of our neighbors aren't, and that's really what propelled us to send someone up here because we are also feeling the hurt. Freight costs are extreme. Our school systems are being affected. You know, the list goes on and on. At this point, you've heard it all. But we're lucky to have what we have, and we shouldn't be that lucky. It shouldn't be that hard to make bare minimum life meet after 50 plus years of what should have been a reliable service. So thank you for your work, and we're going to be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for your testimony. We have a question. Before your question, Representative Christ-Tompkin, I would like to recognize Representative Clayman, who has joined us. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe not so much a question, but a thank you on the record to Assemblymember Tremblay for getting my car at 3 a.m. a couple days ago. And I think the context that's relevant in this hearing is there is zero northbound service out of Sitka this winter. None. Iota. This is the second of the last three sessions that just to get anything from Sitka to Juneau, I have to put my vehicle on a southbound ferry to Petersburg. And some poor soul like Chelsea has to get it off the ferry. It sits in Petersburg for 3 to 4 days. And then when there's finally a northbound ferry heading north, Chelsea or whatever poor friend gets their arm twisted has to put the car back on just to get from Sitka to Juneau because there is zero northbound service out of Sitka.
And
so,
yeah, and through the chair, for the record, I did ask permission to tell that story, so that was not...
Thank you for your testimony. And lastly, but not leastly, we have Mayor Ken Kastner from Homer.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you. And I'm known for my brevity, so I'm going to be very brief. 4 points. Number one, if there's a $40 billion insurance loss in the Carolinas to a hurricane, the insurance companies nationalize the cost, and we all pay, even here in Alaska, a little bit more to pick up the costs of the losses to the insurance company. It's a nationalized system, and we are familiar with that. We do it nationally, we do it statewide, we do it in the boroughs, and we certainly do it in the cities. That's why we have cities. We do things together that we can't do as individuals. That was point one. Point two, somebody could write a PhD dissertation on how interconnected those 33 communities, all those little dots are, economically to this state. It's a huge amount of economic muscle, and really, without hearing all these stories from the people that come before you, you don't know about it. It's kind of like a silent economy. It's not like pumping water or pumping oil through the pipeline where we keep track of that every day and every minute. But the movement of goods and services and fish and tourists and things like that is amazing and really makes the coastal economy work and also makes the state economy work. Point three. The system was completely tested this last summer and tested not very well. The people in Seldovia and Kodiak not only suffered from the loss of ferry service during the strike, but they lost 10 days of ferry service during the fires on the Kenai Peninsula where we got shut down. I was at the ferry terminal at the end of August. It was one of the days where the ferry should have been at its busiest. Three cars and about 16 people got on that ferry to go to Kodiak because everybody was cut off by the fires. Point four, isolation is a punishment. There's no reward for being isolated. And people in those communities already pay a tax for living in those communities. They pay a little bit more for their transportation. They pay a lot more for their goods and services. But they are willing to do it as long as they don't feel like they're cut off from the rest of the world. The world grew smaller with the internet. And so we were able to more efficiently sell things from these small communities, move goods and services out of the communities with the internet. But we needed the transportation link in order to make that work. So I implore you, please address this quickly. Get these communities back on their feet. April 15th can, I mean, if that's the, if you could possibly do it before that, that'd be even better. But you know, the so-called summer season starts a lot faster in the coastal communities than it does in interior Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you kindly. Do we have any questions for the mayor? Seeing none, thank you, Mayor, for coming. And with that, I first want to truly thank all of the testifiers that have taken their time to come to Juneau to testify before this committee. So with that, do we have any committee comments? I guess not, seeing no committee comments. I just, again, thank you all to the testifier. And this is what the stakes are, quite frankly. Alaska is a huge coastal state with equally large coastal needs. Our ferry system is a vital piece of the transportation infrastructure in Alaska. Coastal Alaska needs its highway, just as interior Alaska needs its road system. Testimony on the Alaska Marine Highway System received more support by the numbers than any other issue last session. We broke every record that had been kept by the hearings we had last year with the public testimony, and it's a widely, wholly supported maintaining the Alaska Marine Highway System. My hope is that the administration finally hears its constituents and realizes that the ferry system is vital, not optional, for our Alaskan way of life. There are some serious policy discussions that need to and are happening this session regarding long-term decision-making and planning. However, we have communities suffering with no winter service right now. The most urgent need is to increase the Alaska Marine Highway System funding to avoid irreparable damage to coastal communities and get these communities back on a path to prosperity. I will work tirelessly towards that this session. The committee will not be meeting this Thursday for transportation committee issues, bills, or anything pertinent to our transportation. Please contact Sarah Pearman, who is in the back. Sarah, she is in my office now. I'm very fortunate to have her, and she will be the transportation committee aide. Maybe. Matt was helping today on a temporary basis, and I certainly appreciate that. He and Sarah have been working together so Sarah can get her feet on the ground and will be moving forward as the committee aide. So with that, I see no further business to come before this committee, and we will adjourn at 5:17. Thank you all again.